All right, I want to give a shout out to our friends over at the Ben Hogan Golf Equipment Company. When Ben Hogan founded his company in 1953, his mission was to make the finest golf equipment in the world. That remains their mission today. They forge every club they make to provide the feel and feedback investment clubs simply can't provide. And their craftsmen micro-manufacture each club to your exacting specifications in their Fort Worth, Texas factory. You're only going to find Ben Hogan Golf Equipment at benhogangolf.com. Visit them online today to learn about their great products and their great prices. And folks, this segment of the show is brought to you by our friends over at the PGA Tour Superstore.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore. See why golfers everywhere are proud to call PGA Tour Superstore their golf pro shop. Visit them online at pgatoursuperstore.com. Now back to Chris and more of the show.
All right, and keeping the Maryland theme going tonight, because now back in making his ninth appearance with me here on Next on the Tee is one of my all-time favorites, and that's Donnie Hammond. Let me remind you about Donnie's background. He was born in Frederick, Maryland, so there you go, which is the northern part of the state near the Virginia and West Virginia borders. Played his college golf at Jacksonville University, where he was a four-year letterman. As a sophomore, he finished seventh in the 1977 Sun Belt Championship, and then as a senior, he won that tournament by 6 strokes. He would go on to lead Jacksonville University to 2 Sun Belt Conference championships. He's a charter member of the Jacksonville University Sports Hall of Fame. Donnie earned his tour card by being the medalist at the 1982 PGA Tour qualifying tournament at TPC Sawgrass. And get this, folks, winning that tournament by 14 strokes. He played on the PGA Tour from 1983 to 1988, won twice on the regular tour at the 86 Bob Hope Chrysler Classic in the 89 Texas Open, where he came within 1 stroke of the all-time scoring record after shooting a four-round total of 258 at Oak Hill. He won once on what was then the Buy.com Tour. We know it now as the Korn Ferry Tour. It's a 2000 Lakeland Classic. And he also won the 1982 Florida Open. And over the course of his career, he's had 42 top 10 finishes and 126 top 25s. And I'm very honored he is back with me again tonight here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Donnie, how are you, my friend?
Doing great, Chris. How you doing up there? Good?
Good, thank you. How are things down in Orlando?
The weather's been great. Golf weather. We're able to play a little bit down here. There's not really lockdowns on the golf course as long as you know, everybody gets their own cart. Got to stay away. You don't have to get into the cup to grab the ball. So, been able to get out and play a little bit, get some exercise, mostly biking and swimming a little bit, but it's not bad considering the rest of the country, what everybody's going through.
Mm-hmm. And Don, I kind of wanted to get your thoughts. You're talking about, you know, some of the things that golf courses are doing so that people aren't touching things, you know, don't touch the flag, no ball doesn't go in the cup, you know, no ball washers, all that sort of thing. But, you know, taking that up a notch to the PGA Tour, would you, when they get started back in June, would you be concerned at all? Because even without fans, I was starting to think about this. Even with no fans, if you've got a field that starts out with 140, 150 guys, you got another, you know, caddy for everybody, you got your coaches, you got everybody that's, you know, there from a volunteer standpoint, you got officials, probably got 400 or 500 people on the golf course and doing stuff. Would you have any pause about, you know, hey, there's a lot of folks here touching things and all that sort of thing? How would you feel about playing in a tour event?
Well, it's kind of you have to balance it as a tour player on how much you really need to play in the tournaments, because now with less tournaments, you're going to have less chances to, you know, keep your card, get in the top 30, get into the FedEx Cup. I think what it's going to come down to is the PGA Tour going to be able to have a safe environment out there. I was reading something actually just today that said they're trying to get 1 million tests for the rest of the year so that they can test all the volunteers, the pros, the caddies. If everyone, you know, has gone through tests and they feel pretty confident that, you know, the caddies are clear, the pros, the volunteers, that it's a pretty safe environment. It's not as tricky as if you don't know, you know, like you're walking around now, you have no idea around the country who might have it, who already had it and has recovered from COVID. But, you know, that's what they're going to have to get together. And it's coming up now. They have a month or so to, you know, to be able to figure out how they're going to test everyone. That's going to be the key. If you can have the confidence that you're in a safe environment. You still have to get to the tournaments, and you know, you're going to be running into a lot of people going to the range, going to the clubhouse, in scoring, standing on the tee around the other players and the caddies and the scorers. So it's going to be tricky, but you know, if they get the testing and have it where everyone's pretty much clear, that would take care of 80% of your worries, I think.
And talk about playing a tournament with no fans, you know, no noise, no cheers, no roars, no clapping, no nothing. It's, you know, you and the other guys out there playing just like you would be playing any on any course anywhere. Is that going to be weird?
That was my whole career, Chris. I hardly ever had fans. Yeah, it'd be easy for me. Well, I did get in the hunt a few times, and then there'd be people there standing around the tee, and I'm like, what's everybody doing out here? That's right, I'm in third place. But you know, 90% of the time, you don't have a lot of fans out there watching. So, but it would be a distraction, because you know, you're used to seeing 20, 30, 40,000 people out on the golf course. So you go make a 35 footer on a hole for eagle, and your caddy's the only one that's kind of making any bit of a noise, you know? So that's going to be an adjustment for the guys. I guess they're going to try that the first four tournaments and then, you know, see how that goes. So, but that'll be a slight adjustment for the pros, but it'll be interesting for TV too, to look out on the golf course and see no fans.
Yeah. So, Donnie, that I'm a huge fan of the Masters. You and I have talked about the Masters many times and the times that you played there and the 86 Masters and all of that. But if this thing were to come back around a little bit in the fall, and now we're watching a Masters with no patrons and no roars on the back nine, it just wouldn't seem like how odd would Masters be without the patrons, no blooms, Bermuda grass? I don't know. It's going to lose something for me to get involved, trying to, you know, be excited as I always am about the Masters, where there's dead quiet, no color, you know. What do you think about a Masters, be
a huge asterisk on the tournament. Someone could win, is still going to win the green jacket. There's going to be a great excitement watching the tournament. But imagine walking down by 16 by the tee there, you know, up toward the green, and not have it surrounded with people over there to the left of the lake and behind the green, on the first tee, where it seems like you can barely get a backswing without hitting someone because it's so tight there on the first tee. At least it used to be. But that would be, that would really look funny on TV to see that down around 16, 17 and 18.
How differently do you think the golf course would just even play? Let's take the patrons and everything else aside. I had John Patrick of the Augusta Golf Show on with me a couple of weeks ago, and he said that the fairways are going to be Bermuda grass, not the rye grass we're used to seeing. It's going to be colder. The sun's going to be in a different place than they're used to it being in. How much different do you think the course itself is going to play from what we're used to seeing in April?
I think the colors are going to be different. I think playability, they're probably going to be able to work the moisture on the golf course a little bit to where it plays similar, you know, as they do in the spring. The green should be perfect, but I think even a bigger adjustment is going to be the weather, because you're going to have mornings there that could get really chilly. The humidity is going to be different, toward the fall. So, you know, the lighting, the days is going to be different. So it's going to be a different feel for what you're used to, where the shadows are at certain times of the day when you're teeing off different holes. So it'll be a lot different with the weather and of course the conditions of the fairways and the greens.
And Donnie, kind of keeping with our Maryland theme of the night, you posted a couple of days ago that you and Lee Elder, who was the first African American to qualify for the Masters, you guys referred to each other as the connection, since you guys are both from Maryland. Talk about your relationship with Lee.
I remember Lee back, I was a junior golfer, and I went to a tournament in Ohio. It was a national tournament. I ran into Lee there, and I told him I was from Maryland. So we started a relationship back when I was about 17 years old. And then I got out on tour in 82. And Lee was kind of, still playing a little bit, but I think he was on the Champions Tour by then. But we would see each other at different pro-ams and, you know, some tournaments here and there on the PGA Tour. But he would always call me Connection. And then, of course, I would call him Connection back. So he was Connection and I was Connection. But he had a really great charity event up there in Maryland for a bunch of years and had a lot of the top players come in. Jack Nicklaus would come in and Hale Irwin and a lot of his friends from the tour would come in. And I really got exposed to, you know, what a big thing that pros can do for charities around the country. And Lee had a really nice one, and I got to play in it a few times. But he's just a great personality, great player, had a really unique swing where he had a real funny follow through. He kind of twirled the club through a little bit, but really a good ball striker. And, you know, he's been a friend for a long time.
Did you guys ever talk about the struggles and things that he went through trying to get into the Masters and playing in the Masters, being the first African-American?
No, I never really talked to Lee much about that. I've talked to, you know, Jim Thorpe about, you know, the things he had to go through coming up at country clubs and things, and, you know, how it was tough to, you know, you didn't have some of the benefits that some of the other pros might have been able to have, certain parts of the country. But I never really talked to Lee too much about that. But it's a big part of the game that, you know, the way the hospitality has grown for the pros. And, you know, I mean, the black pros weren't even allowed to play the Masters for a while. And then, you know, you had to have the caddies, and then they started bringing in where you could bring your own caddy. That was a big change, but, it's been a big, been some big changes over the years.
Also recently posted a picture of Mr. Palmer. You had an opportunity to play a practice round of 9 holes with Mr. Palmer. I believe that was back in 86. Well, what was it like getting to play a practice round with the King?
Yeah, that was something. I was getting ready to go home and was standing on the green, hitting a few more putts, and Arnold came off the 9th green and looked over, and I'd played Bay Hill that year. I got an exemption, and so I knew Arnold a little bit, and he said, "Hey kid, you want to play the back?" And so we, just the two of us went out and played the back 9 together. And he was really helpful. He showed me a lot of the, you know, a lot of the lines off the tees and where the pins were going to be. And, you know, we had a nice leisurely, 9 holes there at Augusta in the evening. There's hardly anybody around. And, he still hit the ball pretty well. I thought he'd have a good chance of making the cut and, you know, competing and stuff, but he really took his time to kind of help me, which was my first year there. And ended up, you know, it did help me a lot. I was there in second place going into the last round and had a chance to win. So it was a big help for me.
I want to talk about life on the PGA Tour. I think so many of us just picture it being a very glamorous life, and you're traveling first class and going from town to town and staying in great hotels and playing golf for a living. And I think we've got this image of it being very luxurious life. In my head, from talking to you and several of the guys, it seems like it's a little bit of that, but there's a lot of people don't see the grind of having to go from town to town, all the golf balls and all the practice and all those sorts of things. Talk about what life on the PGA Tour is like that we don't see.
I mean, overall, it was a great life to be able to do something that you know, as a kid, you thought you wanted to do for a living, to be able to compete and, you know, do something that you love to do. So it was never seemed like a job really until after 20 or 25 years, maybe it would, you know, you'd kind of have to nudge yourself a little bit to practice as much as you needed to. But for a long time, it was just so much fun. It's competitive though. I mean, You gotta get breaks. You have to be lucky. You have to have talent. You have to have help along the way. And then you have to be able to stay out on tour, where if you can keep your card and play the first couple years, then you can maybe stretch it out for 10, 15, 20 years once you get through those first couple years. But, you know, the great things about playing the tour were, you know, some of the best courses in the country, like Pebble Beach or Muirfield Village, Riviera, Westchester, Congressional, Doral. And then the favorite part for me was actually on the driving range, being able to get to the range and you're hitting brand new Titleist or Callaways, whatever you wanted, they had them right there. Pro VXs, Pro V, the black ball, and you're standing there hitting balls with Greg Norman or, you know, Hale Irwin's over there, Craig Stadler, Curtis Strange, and you're just standing there thinking, what am I doing here? But I happen to have a name, you know, a golf bag with my name on it. So I guess this is where I'm supposed to be. So, you know, that was the really fun part. And then, of course, being able to have some success too, where you're able to compete with the guys and then eventually win a couple tournaments was kind of the icing on the cake. But, you know, there were sacrifices that you have to go through. You miss your family for a couple weeks at a time, pending, you know, how often they would travel with you. So that was the tough part is, you know, 2 weeks at a time. I usually tried to go no more than 2 weeks before I would at least go home for a week or so. But mostly it was, you know, it was a great life. You get to meet a lot of really cool people in the game of golf and play with, you know, baseball players and play with some actors and just a bunch of successful people along the way. And yeah, everybody seemed to be in a good mood on the tour when you're out there during the tournament. A lot of people were, you know, kind of rooting for you and, you know, wanting you to do well. And the players, you know, everybody was pretty friendly. You know, we helped each other, you know, with your swing, or you helped each other with different issues that you might have. So it was a nice environment, really, for a long time.
And Donnie, I sort of also picture it's the same guys week after week that you're playing with and you're hanging out with, kind of almost like a traveling show. You're just going to see the same guys next week. Hey, I'll see you. You know, I'll see you there on Monday. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, you see, you're right. You're exactly right. You see a bunch of the same faces, and it would get to the point where you're such good friends with everybody that after a while, you're just making fun of everybody else about certain things that you did, certain shots that you hit, what you're working on with your swing. I mean, it would get to that point where everybody was kind of needling everybody else. And that's when it really got to be fun. You know, Payne Stewart was probably the best as far as that would go, as far as, you know, needling everybody and had funny things to say. But that was a cool part of it. You really had to be quick out there because the guys were pretty smart and they were pretty good at it. So you had to pick up a lot of tricks along the way to keep up with them.
Donnie, just one more before I let you go. And I read on your PGA Tour profile that the Baltimore Colts are to thank, you know, for your golf career, because you and your father would go watch them practice and then you'd go play nine holes at a golf course. Talk about how that got you started.
Yeah, that was the start. I mean, I think probably 80% of the pros started out playing with their dad. They would, you know, ride around the cart or follow them or pick up a club when they were 4, 5, or 8 years old. I was 13, so I started a little late. But what my dad would do, we would go down to Westminster in Maryland, and we'd play this little golf course there. We'd usually play nine holes, and then we'd go over and watch the Baltimore Colts practice. And that was when Don Shula was a coach, Johnny Unitas, Bob Mackey, Raymond Berry. I mean, they had a great team, great uniforms too. Remember the helmet with a little horseshoe on it, white, mostly a white uniform. They had a great uniform. And, you know, we could hang out with the guys back then. There were only maybe 2 or 3 reporters at practice, very few fans. And after practice, we'd throw the ball around with Don Shula, and Johnny Unitas actually threw me a couple, I think, at one time. And
wow,
it was like a, you know, they were kind of like a family too. It was a lot more low key back then than it is these days. But I look forward to the, you know, seeing the Colts and watching the football thing as much as playing golf. But then I started getting a little better at the game. And, you know, I just wanted to be on the course all the time after that. It was, you know, as much as I could be out there, it was a joy.
So Donnie, what's up with SpaceX? What's the next launch? What are you looking forward to seeing from those guys?
I guess the big one, the manned launch next month. They're doing testing. I think things are looking pretty good. They've had some successful tests. I went down last week for the last one they did, that they launched up a bunch of satellites, took my Beagle down to the beach, and we got there a little early, and we actually came back to the house before they even launched, because we were down there for 3 hours already. He was the dog seemed to be getting bored a little bit, and I had another couple hours till the launch. So we came back and watched it in the front yard. But I think the manned launch is going to be next month. That's going to be the big one. I'll probably go down for that. That'll be exciting to watch, to, you know, the first yes. time to launch, you know, astronauts from the U.S. in quite a while. So,
well, Donnie, before I let you go, remind our listeners, how can they stay up to date with what you're doing and follow you, whether it's online or on social media?
Yeah, I'm helping at this really cool company here in Orlando, TDJ Golf. TDJ Golf. They do it's like an online platform where you can pair your scores that you play, and you can pick some pros when they start doing the tournaments. And it's kind of like a little gambling game, and the club can, you know, they can operate it. It's on your phone, and they keep up with the scoring and everything. I've been helping them a little bit. That's going to be pretty exciting this year. It's starting to take off, and it's a pretty fun event for the clubs to run. So I've been helping them with that and just playing a little bit, trying to keep my game in shape in case I go out for some qualifiers this summer on the Champions Tour.
Well, Donnie, always a blast having you part of the show, my friend. I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and join me. You're always a lot of fun.
It's great talking to you, Chris. I love your show.
I appreciate you very much, Donnie. Stay safe, my friend. All the best to you and your family. Look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks. I'll send you some videos from the launch.
Yeah, thank you. See you,
okay.
Donnie.
All right, my friend. Bye-bye.
The great Donnie Hammond, and you can follow him online. He's on social media at Donnie Hammond, and doing some great things with a new company, TDJ Golf. Check that out as well. Looking forward to catching up with Donnie again soon.